Hello, everybody. Dr. Lonnie Stewart here from the Healthcare Education Transformation Podcast. Are you a physical therapy student about to start studying for the National Physical Therapy Examination? Or maybe you're a professor, a program director, or a clinical instructor who teaches DPT students preparing for the NPTE? Either way, we would recommend checking out our sponsor, NPTE Final Frontier, and the community they've built around preparing for and succeeding on the NPTE. That exam and the preparation that goes along with it can be long, tedious, difficult, and stress-inducing, but it doesn't have to be. NPTE Final Frontier has the tactics and resources to help address all of the usual barriers. They even have scholarships to help with NPTE study courses, FSBPT registration fees, and even research opportunities. And if that's not enough, they're even donating to the very first annual HET Podcast Scholarship to be awarded at the end of every year. Go to npteff.com for all of the details and use code HET for 10% off all purchases. Links to both the NPTE Final Frontier and their scholarship options are available in the show notes. And now, let's get ready to learn.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to another episode of the Healthcare Education Transformation Podcast. I'm your host, Dr. S. Scott Field. And with us today, a special guest, Dr. Angela Sfantelli-Gisselman. We're going to talk a little bit about leadership, especially shared leadership. We've been on a little bit of a leadership journey this year. I feel like we've had an overall arching theme with leadership, and there's a good reason for that. After we went through COVID, I feel like healthcare leadership kind of took a hit on the chin. I feel like we kind of went in the wrong direction a little bit. It felt like leadership wasn't exactly prepared and ready to handle this. Not that somebody can ever predict something like COVID-19. However, it's becoming more important than ever to craft great leaders in the world of healthcare. And so we're here today to talk a little bit about that. Angela, if you wouldn't mind, tell us a little bit about your academic journey and how it's led you to where you're at today.
Yeah, sure. Thank you for having me, first of all. So I am from Ohio. I'm an Ohio native. And my undergraduate degree was at Miami of Ohio, which is the original Miami of Ohio, not Florida, to be confused with Florida, because I like to educate everybody that Miami of Ohio was around before Florida was a part of the United States of America. And then I went from there to Duke for my Doctor of Physical Therapy degree. I was out in the field for a few years and then really kind of wanted more. And I had the opportunity to be the first orthopedic resident at University of North Carolina, Chapel Hill. So that was an awesome opportunity to hone my skills in orthopedics, graduated from that program, and was working out in an outpatient kind of sports ortho clinic. And then again, realized I need more. I wanted more. So I went back to a mentor of mine from Duke. And he said to me, hey, you want to do a PhD, right? And I was like, I think so. Why not? And that connection went from a conversation to a connection with a supervisor in New Zealand. And so I applied to and was accepted for a PhD journey at the University of Otago, which is in Dunedin, New Zealand. So my husband and I up and left and moved and lived there and worked and learned for 3 years, where I did my PhD, then came back and I had my first academic post at High Point University. And now I'm at Tufts University at our DPT Phoenix location. So that's a very fast track overview.
Yeah, very cool. Unfortunately, through Duke and Chapel Hill, you check off two of my most hated schools. I'm a Wake Forest guy myself. Dr. Kyle Covington, who you probably know from Duke, was also Wake Forest guy. He and I graduated together before he went over to the dark side there in Duke. but no, it's always good times there in North Carolina. I miss it, you know, greatly. It's been a great part of my life. I enjoyed all my time there in Carolina. So yeah, let's get down to the meat and potatoes a little bit of today's episode. You gave a great presentation at ELC on shared leadership. Tell us in its simplest form, what the definition of shared leadership is. What is that?
I think I want to start out first that this is not my idea or I'm not the expert, sure, but I have been a very grateful recipient of shared leadership since my first academic post. And to me, in higher education, but also in healthcare, shared leadership is a model that, first of all, there's distributed responsibilities and roles where you are giving the power and the expertise to the people who know it best. And you come to the table not to tell other people how to do their job, but to receive the information because they are the ones that are in it, that know what they're doing, that can give you the information to make the higher level decisions as a team. And importantly, the way we preserve legacy in an organization, in higher education, when someone moves on or is promoted or it retires and is done with their career. So it's, I think, twofold, efficiency, but it's also preserving legacy for transitioning of roles.
Yeah, one of the things that I took away from that talk, you just alluded to it, is efficiency. You are super efficient from everything to meetings, down to scheduling, down to, content. Tell us more about why efficiency is so important with regards to shared leadership and how you approach it, because you are very good at it.
Time is money. And I think I can't ignore the fact that I'm influenced by my dad, who was a businessman, and how higher education is also a business. Healthcare is also a business. And I think because of nature that we are such compassionate, giving of ourselves, individuals, clinicians, we're not trained to take that into a model where efficiency is needed for many reasons. And so in higher education, efficiency also means that when you're in a room with people, you need to have a really defined purpose of why you're there. It's not simply just to give reports and for me to hear, it's to tackle the higher level things that are much greater than just that email, that need the brains in the room at the table to have those higher level conversations. I think it's also elevated to your point regarding with COVID. I'm in a hybrid model. And so we're in probably more, if not just as many meetings as anybody else, but those meetings to me need to be something that I can't get done over Teams with you or an email or a document where we're editing together. They need to be, I don't understand, you don't understand me, perspective, connecting, networking, partnership building versus editing of a document that we're sitting down together, for example. It's critical to getting tasks done, but it's also critical to allowing your team to have an appreciation of your other offices and where there are pinch points, where there are successes, where there are needs. You really don't hear that outside of these shared leadership models, unless you have an opportunity, for example, to serve like as an assistant DCE or an assistant role. You can't appreciate the demands that are happening that then might impact how you approach them or how you approach tasks or asks of other people. So I kind of went all over that answer, but did you want more specifics on efficiency?
No, I think you hit the nail on the head there, because I can't tell you how many times I've heard people say that meeting could have been an email. And coming from a flex program as well, like, we're getting much, much better at recognizing what needs to be talked about in a meeting versus what can be handled in an email or a document, because we meet on campus every week, once a week on Tuesday. That's our meeting day. And because we only have that short time together, that's the really important stuff, right? Like the boulders that we need to conquer and what we have to kind of take care of. Whereas the little micro stuff can be hashed out in an email or a step-by-step document or something like that. So, you know, I feel like that's super important, especially nowadays, you know, post-COVID, like we talked about, we live and die on Zoom meetings these days, you know? So like, if I can give somebody some of their time back, or if I can get some of my time back, that's just super valuable, because that to me has become my biggest asset. But, you know, owning a business as well myself, time is my biggest commodity. That's the thing that I value the most. And so when my time gets wasted, it's super frustrating. So I can see how, especially coming from the leadership aspect of things, you have to be efficient. Otherwise, people kind of lose trust and they lose interest and they're just like, why are we here? What are we doing? This stuff again? Like, really? Like, you know, so I can see how that can be a real sticking point with regards to shared leadership. What are some of the things that you feel like are like barriers or issues with regards to shared leadership? What are some of the uphill battles and struggles that you've seen with regards to shared leadership?
Yeah, I'll definitely go there. I want to go back 1 minute and say I think a critical item that I didn't mention before about why efficiency is important is that I always step back and remind myself that you hire people not because they can sit in meetings. You hire people to teach, to do research, to serve in the clinic, to serve nationally, or whatever it might be in their capacity. And so the more that inefficient meetings get in the way of your people doing their craft, again, it's interfering with your ability to achieve your outcomes, to push your program or your organization to the next level. And so that is why I am so persnicky on, tell me why I'm coming to this meeting, right? Who really needs to be there? And also be courageous enough to say, hey guys, I'm not prepared right now. I'm behind. Like right now for me, I've got a lot going on. So there are meetings where I am canceling 24 hours before and with an apology of I have nothing to lead right now.
Yeah.
We're going to do this on Teams instead. So I want to just back up because that is protecting people's craft. Like, yeah. Why did you hire them? You did not hire them to sit and to listen right. to you report out.
That's a super important thing to note because again, like people have expertise and authority in things, right? And if we do a SWOT analysis, like you said, you hired them on because of their strengths. And one thing that I found that leadership is either really good at and then they thrive or is tough for them is delegation. And so when you delegate people these tasks to go and do, if you're wasting their time and killing it with meetings and stuff that don't really need to be meetings, their time and expertise and authority is going to waste. So that's a great point.
Yeah. So thanks for letting me backtrack.
Yeah, please.
Your question about challenges. So there are a few. And I will also say that there are times where I don't think a shared leadership model is what should be the primary means of a leadership situation. So, you know, for example, there are decisions that are made within our program and department level that are made by one person and they should be. But some of the challenges we run into, I think, will be of no uncommon or unfamiliar thing to anybody else. It starts with a C and ends in Asian, communication. So, you know, the matter of how often you communicate updates to core faculty, for example, or to associate faculty, what manner you do that, what frequency you do that, how much you do that. And there are some faculty who want everything, who want the details, the top to bottom, the decision-making. There are some faculty that are like, give me the high level, I don't care about the rest. And so it's striking a balance between making sure that there is a sufficient amount of communication that meets the needs for everyone to feel that they are at that table still, that they have agency in decision-making, they have, you know, they have also a voice, and that process is really critical. So that's, communication is always the root, I think the root and the center and the root of all evil and all good in lots of situations. I would say too that the center of a well-functioning shared leadership model are people who, one, can hold themselves accountable to their task, who can delegate when time gets tough or when they have individuals who are there that, for example, as a staff member working in their office or a faculty member, like as an assistant DCE, and who can lean on the other team members to say, I've got a lot going on right now, I need your help. And the beauty of the model is if I'm sitting at the table with, for example, our directors of student affairs and curriculum and clinical education and research, I know enough about their offices that I can step into some of these spaces and cover, you know, not really the nitty gritty, but just if they're having a really overwhelm or a rough time, that's what we do. And that same process is used for CAPTI items. You know, those huge, huge documents that we do for CAPTI are not meant to be for one person, full stop. And so this model allows a kind of tiered approach of a leadership team and the offices that have the expertise and some aspects of the document to be the primary leads on that. But then you're using that information to pull in core faculty with also their insight and their expertise and their knowledge. So it's a shared process as well for items like that that are, you know, necessary to any program's progression and success.
Yeah. Well, let's talk about the success. Let's flip the script a little. What are some of the benefits and great things you've seen come from shared leadership?
And now for a quick shout out to our newest sponsor, Varela Financial. If you're a physical therapist and you have student loan debt, you got to talk to these guys. What makes them unique is that they view financial planning like running hurdles on a track. And for PTs, the first hurdle many of us run into is student loan debt. Varela Financial will help you get over that hurdle. They not only take the time to explain to you which plans you individually qualify for and how those plans work, but they also take the time to show you what your individual case looks like, mapped out within each option. So if you're looking for help on your student loan debt or any area of personal finances, we recommend working with them. I use Varela Financial personally, and they were able to help me lower my student loan repayment from about $1,800 a month down to about $135 per month simply by finding the right repayment plan that best fit me, my family, and our life goals. You can check them out at VarelaFinancial.com. Link is in the show notes if you need it for reference, and tell them the HET podcast crew sent you. And now back to the show.
First and foremost, this is my personal experience. My first academic post was in a shared leadership model as an assistant director of clinical education. And I was at the table with all the other offices, student affairs, research, clinical education, what am I missing, curriculum. I was in conversations that as a brand new grad for PhD, my first academic post, I had never been exposed to ever. And I don't think I would have as a core faculty member where my entire workload was just teaching, you know, and no admin and some maybe some research on the side. And I was exposed to things such as budget, CAPD regulations and design, you know, crafting from AFC to SSR requirements. I was in on conversations of really challenging student situations that like you just blow your mind. You're like, wow, this happens in academia. I was in conversations about HR. I was in conversations about politics. So all because I had a seat at that table. And so I think my first really, I think the beauty of this model is you give more seats at that important decision-making table to young academics who then can become possibly the next generation of leadership. And this model as well allows those seats to, I hope as well in the future, we are a more and more diverse faculty, all the ways you want to define diversity. And when you have more seats at the table, there's more opportunities for those individuals to have a voice, to be experienced in that area. Because when you go up for that next job, you can now speak to not only just being a part of the conversation, but, oh yes, I was helping draft that document. I did edits. I was involved in this conversation with an academic progression issue with the student and et cetera. So it exposes you to the breadth and depth of a higher education that is, I think, well beyond just a core faculty position. So that goes into legacy as well, which you spoke about a little bit before, but we are approaching a major tipping point, I think, of faculty in PT.
We're in trouble.
We are. And it is, all of us know, faculty turnover is hard. It's expensive. It is draining on all of us. And it's also good though for people when they move on. I'm not saying it's a bad thing, but this type of model, for example, allows me, I'll give you a direct example. We have like some assistant roles and I have an assistant director of admissions, kind of an informal position in a role, but this faculty member approached me with interest in knowing more about admissions. So I have taken this individual under my wing, has been a part of our meetings, you know, had this experience then to go up for an opportunity for a next job and could speak directly to experiences and hands-on learning for a role that otherwise would not have been an opportunity for that person. So that legacy is critical and a really huge success. I also really think that at the root of it, at the center of shared leadership, is just a respect for the amount of work it takes to run a program. I think it's hard to appreciate that if you aren't privy to understanding, for example, clinical education and the amount of time and energy and people and it takes to do that. And so when you are at this table, this shared leadership model, where you are dipping into other offices and assisting, you're humbled by what it truly takes to run a program like this. In addition to everything that core faculty do, I myself included with teaching and research, the administrative aspect of it often goes unnoticed because it should. It should allow core faculty and everyone else to do their job what they need to do if it's functioning well. So those are some of my top successes or positives of a shared leadership.
Yeah, I feel like we need one of those like 90s infomercials, shooting star with the rainbow, the more you know, like if we give our hands on and we get our hands dirty and we actually sit there as core faculty, not just a cog in the wheel, we're privy to all of this stuff going on. It gives a much higher level understanding of what is truly, what our goal is, what our mission is, what our vision is, and how we can get there.
Yes.
Because you're right. If you're not working hard and doing all the extra things that need to be done, then when it comes time for a new opportunity or an at-bat, if you will, to move up, you don't know the things you need to know to have that experience to level up and say, yeah, hey, I was a part of this. I knew about this. I was doing this. I have a grasp on the understanding of what it takes to fill that position and to, you know, to do it well. So I think that's a huge takeaway right there, you know?
I will also speak to one more, actually.
Yeah, please.
So in my role as director of admissions, I have a significant amount of my interface and my time is spent with the department above me. So our overarching department. And what I mean is, you know, I'm communicating with and collaborating with our marketing and enrollment team at Tufts Medical School graduate programs, for example, also enrollment, also admissions. The amount of time it takes and meetings that I have for that position alone, I truly cannot imagine somebody who's doesn't have an administrative portion set aside to do that job fully. And the beauty of it is that when I come to my shared leadership model, my table with my team at DPT Phoenix, Tufts Phoenix, I know my program director doesn't need to micromanage me on what I'm doing. I bring the high level summary of these meetings. I get the information that I need from the people at the table. I go back, I do my job, I bring it back. So it's just an efficient flow from the offices that I'm often interfacing with, the meetings that I have. I'm bringing the most important information back to my program to make the decisions that are going back up to the department level. So it allows, I think, for more seamless communication, collaboration, and partnership between different levels within an organization. And I think that's really critical for PT in both healthcare and higher ed, where we often isolate ourselves and not intentionally in a scenario where we can't afford to isolate ourselves any longer. And in a competitive healthcare market, and if you can show your value as a physical therapist and as a physical therapist educator and an administrator to physicians, PAs, whatever it might be, marketing team, that I think really surprises people and is also another benefit of this model.
Well, and that's the reason this whole podcast was started. We're trying to break down silos amongst, healthcare education. We're trying to show what's working, best practices amongst all the different healthcare educators out there. We're not trying to, isolate ourselves and say ours is the best way. This is the model. This is what works, right? We're trying to have those conversations. We're trying to network and really have seats at the table so that, it may come down to something like, hey, you want to be the dean of the medical school? Like, yeah, you could totally do that because you've been interacting interprofessionally with all these other groups underneath the medical school, including physical therapy and the med students and the nursing students and blah, 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 right? Like even having an opportunity, right? I'm not a big believer in luck. I think you work really hard and you do the right things for a really long time. And when opportunity presents itself like that, you can step in and be that person because you've worked so hard at it and done all the right things to get you to that point, you know? And so I couldn't agree more that really gives us the opportunity to even have the seat at the table and really get those positions that are available to us as physical therapists, as educators, right? Above and beyond just our title. All right, well, let's say this. Let's say there's a new school just getting started or an old school that's completely looking to scrap it, tear it down, and start from scratch. How does somebody go about implementing this shared leadership model? What are some things they have to take into account or think about? How do you get started if you're interested?
I will first give huge props to a mentor of mine, also our chair of our Department of Rehab Sciences, Dr. Eric Hegedus. I walked into the model, I think, that he started, where I met my first post. And a really, really important part of this model, if you want to allow your people to do it well, is allocating sufficient time for administrative capacity and workload. And that is often a sticky point for individuals. You know, it's an awkward situation to talk about. But especially I can speak to my office of admissions. And I think if anyone here is in admissions and physical therapy listening to this,
been there, done that, been on the admissions committee.
Yep. My role is not just screening applicants and designing the process and reviewing faculty reviews. My role is, I think, which is even more pivotal now for all of us, is how do I differentiate Tufts Phoenix on the growing map of increasing number of programs and an incredibly, increasingly competitive space for applicants and for quality applicants. And in order to do that well, I have to have the time allocated where I can interface and be the primary lead and expert for representing my program at marketing and enrollment and collaborations, and having time to be creative and to think bigger and to really pour energy into that space. And so first and foremost is being brave enough to say these people need more than 5% workload allocation, 10 is not even enough, 15 is not even enough for that administrative position if you want them to be able to do it well. Another benefit of that, to your point about our ELC talk that Dr. Evan Papa spoke about, is, and he's a program director at Tufts Seattle, what he mentioned, the benefit of this model is when you do, if you, when you have the opportunity to allocate more time administratively to the people at that leadership table, you as a program director can be a program director. You don't need to be a pseudo DOA, director of admission, the pseudo director of clinical education and curriculum. You can be the pioneer of driving your mission and vision of serving your faculty in their development, whatever that might look like for your program. You can be the person that should be looking at a 5, 10, 15 year budget. What are we doing? What are we returning on? Our, you know, what's our ROI? Because you have those experts coming in who are doing those meetings that we spoke to earlier. So one, be brave enough to ask for those allocations and administrative time so your people can do their job and do their work protecting their craft. I think the other aspect would be reach out to some of us that are doing it. Can speak for my colleagues at Tufts that I'm especially this way. There's no reason why somebody needs to flounder and reinvent the wheel when some of us are already doing it. And it's not like a trademark secret thing. It's, we're still figuring it out. It's not perfect. It's not always ideal. And like, reach out to us. Happy to give the ups, the downs, the good, the bad, the ugly. You don't need to start from complete scratch in a model like that. So those are my first two, you must have, or at least the must have is the workload allocation. And the two is reach out, collaborate, partner with people.
Yeah, I hope that academia is moving more towards that, share what's working and best practices and, you know, kind of shoo away that which isn't working. You know, I think it's hard to say there's like some proprietary secret that we all know to be the best program out there. Like, we haven't even figured out what programs work and which ones don't. So like, we don't know what models are good. Is it a 2-year, 3-year, 4-year? Who knows? Like, we're all just trying to do the best we can. So I think the more that we can share and collaborate, again, it's more of an open mindset. It's not that scarcity mindset, me, 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 it's mine and I'm protecting it kind of thing. We need to be more open and share what's working and what's not if we're really going to give the best possible product we can to our students and really do right by them, because it's already a tough enough field to navigate and the debt to income ratio is bad and getting worse. It's a tough field right now. So why not try to find the best ways we can to serve our students, you know? And I think that this model really for me was enlightening. It was refreshing, you know, it felt good. It felt like, oh yeah, this is how it should be, you know? And again, it's going to look different for everybody and they're going to have different barriers, I'm sure, and different journeys to get there. But I think it's a model that could easily be successful in any sort of setting. So my hope is that we see more of it. Well, Angela, we ask all of our guests this one final question. And that question is, if you could change one aspect of higher education, whether it be DPT or otherwise, what aspect would you change and how would you change it?
I would love to see a greater collaboration with our international colleagues. Mm, and this
I like that one.
Comes from, I'm obviously, I have a bias here. My training was in New Zealand. But I think we would find that a few things. I think we'd find a lot of our struggles are the same. Our eyes would be open to the ways in which some countries are light years ahead of us in the United States in ways in areas such as DEIJ efforts, in areas that we're, I think, finally starting to put appropriate attention and time towards progressing and making it a priority. I think we would also see other methods and pathways to securing our foot and our grounding in our healthcare system here in the United States. Because as I'm always reminded, you know, physiotherapy, I also wish we were called physiotherapists. Yeah. That's another conversation for a different day, but physiotherapy, you know, in the UK and in New Zealand has always had a place in primary care and first off the street from the get-go. And we've got there, we're there, we've done incredible work in advocacy and we're still trying to, you know, grow. So I just wish we would continue to see that from the education perspective, from ground one with our students, because we do have that through research. We have that through education in terms of a higher education, like a PhD, but wouldn't it be cool to have classroom connections of our students that start that partnership early and grow from there? And they happen organically already on Twitter and ways and that way too in the research space, but I would really love to see more of that intentionally built, because I think we can learn a lot from one another.
Big time. I love that. I love that take. I feel like you've now opened my mind to like, all right, I got to start looking up some higher education conferences that are international, because I know it would greatly enlighten me on teaching methods and, structures and things that they're doing outside of the US, because now I'm just interested. Now I just want to know. I want to learn more. So thank you for that answer. I'm excited to do my due diligence and see what's out there. Angela, it's been an absolute pleasure sharing this conversation with you and having you on to enlighten our audience on shared leadership. Where can people find you or reach out to you if they just have follow-up questions or want to know more about what you're up to and shared leadership?
Yeah, thank you. I'm on Twitter, ASG Physio. S as in Sam. So please feel free to direct message me or say hello. And then I work at Tufts University, the DPT program in Phoenix. I can be reached at Angela, Angela dot Gisselman, GISSELMAN at Tufts.edu. That's the best way to get a hold of me. We'd be either the Twitter channel or an email. I'm happy. I'm a collaborator and team player at heart. So it fills me up when people reach out.
Awesome. We'll put those links in the show notes so everyone can find you easily. And Angela, thank you so much. It's been an absolute pleasure chatting with you.
Thanks for having me.
Well, I hope that episode was entertaining as much as it was informational and educational. If you enjoyed this episode or any of our past episodes, we ask you to please subscribe to the podcast and leave us a rating and review. And please share out the episodes to those who you feel may be able to benefit from them. We also urge you to follow us on all social media platforms at HET Podcast and let us know what topics or experts you would like to hear from in future episodes. And just as a reminder, none of the information on today's show should be considered medical advice. It's simply infotainment or edutainment to help educate our audience. For medical advice, we always advise you to reach out to your preferred medical professionals, and we'll see you on the next show.